time now for Connecting the Diocese. Connecting the Diocese is a production of the Diocese of La Crosse. Here's host Jack Socha.
Well, thank you for tuning in, Connecting the Diocese. We've got quite an exciting show coming up. But first, you know, a couple of quick stories from this week. You may have heard that the Pope is having some trouble with his knee, and a group of clergy from Mexico was visiting, talking to the Pope in Spanish, asking him, how is your knee doing? Are you going to be using a wheelchair or a cane? And with a little bit of a glint in his eye, the Pope replied, well, maybe, maybe not. But, you know, also maybe just a good shot of tequila would do the job. Another example of what they used to call pluck is in Ukraine, where a lady's house, the side of her house, had been strafed with machine gun fire, and there were bullet holes working their way along the front of the house. Well, she took each bullet hole, which was kind of dark, and used it as the center for kind of like a posy and painted flowers around each one to decorate her house. Keeping your spirits up, that is the name of the game. We'll be right back with more on Connecting the Diocese. Time as usual for a quick COVID update. If you've been reading anything aside from reading about Johnny Depp, you'll know that COVID is still out there. There's a couple of variants out there. There are hot spots out there. I happen to live in one of the hot spots. And so you've got to be careful. Now, they also announced that you can go to the U.S. Postal Service website, USPS, and for free, just fill out your name and address. You can order 8 COVID test kits that will be sent to your house absolutely free. Now, some people will try to convince you, why are they doing this? It's just a cold. Well, that's simply not true. It's deadly. There's a million people dead right now. And so if you come back from a large family gathering or some other event where you think you may have been exposed, maybe you don't feel real well, you can test yourself right away to get some early help. The test is painless. You simply stick a little swab up your nose for a few seconds and dip it into a vial and then put it in a little gadget, and it'll tell you in 15 minutes whether you are infected or not. I recently had 2 family occasions, which after 2 years, it was kind of nice to get out to, even though one of them was a funeral, the other one was Easter. And before the Easter one, I took the test to make sure I wasn't infected, because I am in a hot spot where there's a high rate of infection going on. I didn't want to infect people at Easter. And also at the funeral, there's all kinds of people I'd never met before, hadn't seen before, well-wishers, things like that. I wanted to make sure I wasn't sick after I came back. So I took the test again. And when we finally get around to actually recording the bishop face-to-face, I will take the COVID test the night before I go in. Again, because I don't want to be the guy who infects our bishop for a third time. So regardless of your state of vaccination, an ounce of prevention, as they say, is worth a pound of cure. And one thing you can do to get a better handle on what is going on in your family, what is going on in your area, is simply get the tests and periodically take one of the tests. They're free. Just go to usps.gov and they will send you 8 COVID-19 test kits. Well, thank you again for tuning in, Connecting the Diocese. We have a new milestone for this show with this new technology we've been working with for the past month or two. 2 guests on today, simultaneously from 2 different places. First, I want to introduce Chris Ruff, and I always mangle his title, so I'm going to ask him to do it because it's a mouthful, but it also explains a lot what he does. Chris, welcome to the show. What is your title, by the way?
Thanks, Jack. I'm the Director of the Office for Ministries and Social Concerns for the Diocese.
Ministries and Social Concerns, and that covers a wide area. You are involved in so much stuff, helping so many people, everything from the pro-life movement to working with Catholic charities to doing all kinds of stuff. And who is our guest today that you have brought along?
That would be Valentina Pavzhikova, who's the founder and president of Chalice of Mercy Mission to Ukraine.
Valentina, welcome to the show, by the way. It's been a very long time since we talked to you.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you for inviting me back. I'm very happy to share, with a sadness, of course, in my heart, but I'm happy to share about mission work of Chalice of Mercy, and especially recent month due to the full invasion of Russia into my country, Ukraine. Yes, and so I'm really thankful for giving me this opportunity to speak. Thank you.
The last time we spoke, and believe me, it was a number of years ago, I was in, I think, Chris's office with you and a couple of microphones, and you were this young woman who had really gotten this idea and just gotten it going to do a mission to Ukraine to try to explain to the doctors there what abortion was all about, what they were doing, and it's taken off. You have done an awful lot of trips. How many trips overseas have you done over the years now?
Well, it would be difficult to count how many trips, but I should say, if we would talk about mission work with gynecology doctors from Ukraine and their pilgrimage to Medjugorje, it has been more than 1,500 gynecology doctors that have participated in that.
Chris, can you imagine that that young lady has been that busy for all these years? How many years has it been since you first two met?
Well, actually, it was back in, I want to say it was 2011. I believe it was the end of 2011 that Valentina, basically, I was holding a pro-life meeting, a diocesan pro-life meeting, and one of the members of our committee knew Valentina and brought her along. And I had had Alice Heinzen, who used to direct the Office of Family Life, repeatedly over about a year had said, you should meet this Valentina Pavzhikova, who directs this pro-life mission to Ukraine called Chalice of Mercy. And I said, well, okay, well, that would be nice. And I just, you know, life is busy. But she was accompanied this member of our committee, and she came in just kind of radiating this lovely smile. And I just had this sense that, okay, this is going to be interesting. And we had our meeting. And then at the end of the meeting, I said, Valentina, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your mission? And so then she unfolded this story of kind of how she had come to the United States at the age of 18 and had a profound conversion and the mission work she was doing. You know, I've basically written about that and talked about that several times. And part of me wants to keep it short just so we can get to the meat of today, of Ukraine and the tremendous suffering in Ukraine and what she's doing to really help the suffering people of her homeland. So I'll just keep it kind of short and say that when she told us her story, it was about an hour after the meeting that she finished, and our jaws had just dropped. It was just like, this is the most amazing story ever.
Yeah.
And I knew then that Valentina was going to be playing a very important role in our diocese and obviously well beyond our diocese. So we've worked together for years since then in various ways, and it's been a constant joy.
And Valentina, you are on actually a smartphone, which is interesting. We're trying that out for the first time, too. So we got new things going on here. Valentina, can you hear us okay?
Yes, I can hear you. And I'm sorry, sometimes my internet, the place where I live, is just not strong. So I apologize if... Yes.
Yes, we understand that. And no, don't worry about it. You know, this is something that sooner or later, they're going to have good Wi-Fi throughout the entire country, because so many people are spread around now. And it makes this kind of thing possible. It's really just quite remarkable. Chris gave a brief description of what your first meeting was like, what your mission work was like. You mentioned that you have dealt with hundreds of doctors in Ukraine. So we've kind of got the basic idea of what you have been doing up to now. That was then, and it will continue. Today, though, is a different story. What is the name of your town in Ukraine that you're from?
So I was born in a city which is southeast of Ukraine, Zaporizhia. So it's one of the largest cities in Ukraine. And so very industrial city. This city was supposed to be ideal prototype what the city without God should be. It was a dream of Lenin to build such a city, just like Nowa Huta in Poland, of that type. And so I was born in this. It's really, actually, in fact, to say, a land of Cossacks. You know, that's where the Cossack army have lived. And that's where they would go to fight from, you know, to whatever lands that would be sent, they would go on. And yeah, so it's one of the most beautiful cities and yet the most suffering cities of Ukraine.
Hmm. Obviously, because you have friends and relatives, loved ones back there, you have probably been following the buildup to this invasion more than a lot of people have. When did you first think that something bad was about to happen?
Well, this war is not new for us. It's already started 8 years ago, at 8.5 years ago. And so escalation and the escalation higher up started probably about a year ago. And we've heard about these rumors that Putin is planning to march in with a full-scale war. But, you know, on the other hand, we had some very good time to prepare for this as well, because if that would happen 8 years ago, Ukraine would not be able to stand strong against such a brutal invasion. But because we had some time, there was some preparation. So we heard about this. We did not want to believe that this is what he would do, because it's just absolutely insane. And every corner that you would look, that it is just insane. One of the most horrible, insane ideas one person can have now in this time, 2022, no? But there seems particular hatred he has for Ukrainians and for Ukraine as nation. And now it's not just war, it is genocide of Ukrainian people as well. So the war crimes that are being registered right now is as brutal as what we have experienced in the last century with Nazi Germany and Adolf Hitler and what he has done to half of the world, you know, at his lifetime. So, yes, we have not expected, say, with such a scale, but it was, thankfully to God, we had some time to prepare for his coming.
You know, Americans always are interested in supporting, well, the smaller guy in a battle. And so we hate it when a big country comes in and tries to do precisely what Putin is doing. And I will tell you that the courage of the Ukrainian people and the guts, the fight. We've been hearing stories, you know, of people who were civil lawyers. I was listening to a radio show, and this guy was a civil lawyer. Through translation, he was talking. And, you know, he had never fired a rifle. He said, we marched with rifles when I was in college or in school, but we never actually fired them. And he was putting, you know, he was taking up arms. And I was seeing photographs of young college age girls, you know, with kind of blue and purple hair and, you know, the typical kind of things that you do, being shown how to operate an automatic rifle, you know, you sit there and you go, the courage. I think the one thing that despots forget is that when people are fighting for their own country, boy, you are up against something. You are really up against something.
Yes.
Now, we have been watching the devastation go on. Is your city intact, destroyed? What is it now?
So my city is about, let's say, 3 hours away from the front line, zero line. We call it zero line. And that's where the most horrible fighting is happening. So, but as you see probably on the news, Ukraine has been invaded in every city. Now we have been bombarded pretty much in every city of Ukraine. Just last night, imagine this is, we're talking about very west part of Ukraine, near Polish border city called Lviv. It was all night long endangered. It was a lot of missiles came into the city. And it's practically right at the border of Poland. And night, the sirens was activated all night long. So there is no city that is right now not in danger. You know, every city, every town, every village. So Zaporizhia is only about, let's say, well, talking about Mariupol, no, Mariupol city is one of the, probably what you hear all the time is it's not that far. That's where it's like 3 hours, you know, of driving, just sitting in the car. And several villages around this area, especially Vasilivka village and other villages in Orekhov region, has been brutally, just absolutely taken by Russian soldiers, including Melitopol. Melitopol is only an hour away from my city. In fact, that's where we have Catholic Church. Our priest, Father Tomasz Nadbereżny, he was there at the time when the first bomb has fallen, right not that far from the parish. He heard it. He thought it was just a thunderstorm, but it was not. So thankfully to God, he took the car and he drove away to Zaporizhia. Just if he would not do this in a couple of days, he would be already, we don't know if he would be even alive, because there's a hatred against, you know, Russians, against Russian Orthodox Church, against Catholics primarily, is another story to say, no? But So yes, it's, everything is happening really, really near. In fact, we in Zaporizhia, we have a military hospital that Chalice of Mercy has been working for several years in. I was organizing medical surgery missions with the doctors from Spain. And I have a fantastic team of doctors from Madrid. In fact, I just arrived last night at 3 a.m. at home. And I was with them to visit, to organize further missions. And so hospital, military hospital in my city is a front line hospital. Pretty much every wounded soldier arrives from the fighting areas. They go through this hospital. And so it's everything is really, really near home. And my city was also bombarded several times. Thankfully to God, it was nothing yet has been damaged that is very, very valuable. But Zaporizhia is very strategic city. As I was mentioning, this industrial city, we have many factories, steel factories, stainless steel factories. And we have Dnieper River access that goes right down to the Black Sea. And if that would be cut off, if this Crimea would be cut off from us, Ukraine would be pretty much cut off from, you know, from the Black Sea totally. And so we are just hoping, praying, hoping, but we also very much fortifying around Zaporizhia city. Our troops are there, and they don't allow to come Russian army too close. They're fighting like a lion, and you're right, it's amazing. I have never been so proud of my people, of my young people, of my country, Ukraine. There's so many of my friends are fighting. My cousin is fighting. My uncle is a volunteer. You know, he's basically my eyes, my hands, my feet right now there in Zaporizhia, because we do right now we're shipping a lot of humanitarian aid, but maybe I can share about this later. So
we honor our war dead, our military dead, who died in battle in most cases, and it is now simply called Memorial Day. The thing that we frequently do for the past 10 years on this show is we play a little excerpt of a radio program that was broadcast the night that Germany surrendered. And it had 60 million people listening to the original show. And it talks about how the people who were fighting, you know, these were just common working people, people working in offices, who, when the war broke out, they learned to do the military things. And, you know, they said that the average person of today defeated the Superman of tomorrow, because the Germans were going to be the Superman. And it is remarkable broadcast. We're going to play part of it again next week, along with some other things as well, including some Ukrainian things as well. But the idea that these people have risen up to just say, no, you are not going to do this. The Russians came in and they took a whole bunch of wheat that was, you know, packaged up. And
yes.
The next thing you know, they had it on boats and they were trying to sell it in the Mediterranean, because with all the financial stuff being cut off, they're desperate to get hold of money. And so they took the wheat out of your country that was needed to feed these people, tried to sell it, and now they're blockading these ships, not letting them do it if they can possibly do it. How is the food supply going on in there? Are people eating pretty well or not well?
So right now we have many European countries are helping us, right, with humanitarian aid, including food. Just last night I had just our mission, Chalice of Mercy mission, brought 13 tons of food to Zaporizhia, including our medical surgical supplies, just arrived yesterday as well. So I had two trucks at the same time arriving to Zaporizhia. So it is not, let's say, to the point of starvation, you know, but supplies are very low, you know, and the problem of the wheat is not only Ukrainian problem. It's going to be touching every other country who depend on Ukraine, right? Because Ukraine still remains a breadbasket for almost the entire world. You know, we're talking about, you know, our wheat reaches every continent, pretty much, you know. And so it's going to be a tragedy if something happened to our fields. But so far, thankfully to God, again, like my uncle, he's a farmer. He plants the wheat, sunflower seeds. He plants corn. He plants other things on his fields, and he was able to do everything on time, like as so many other farmers as well. So they just go on basically under the bombs and continue to plant the land, because we know it is not only our country depend on us, but also other countries. And as much as Ukraine is right now bulletproof jacket for European countries, not only for European countries, I guess that's why so many countries are helping us in any way that is possible, no? And with military equipment, with food supplies, humanitarian aid, medical aid, everything else, because they understand, including America, if Ukraine is being helped to fight this fight, many things in this world will be avoided. Because Putin is not somebody who is just interested to stop with limit himself only with Ukraine, right? Because he's already indicated that he's interested very much about other countries that used to belong to the former former Soviet Union. No, right. He's sick with desire for empire. So yes, we are doing okay, I should say.
And I don't mean to interrupt, Valentina. She can continue, obviously. I think, especially since the show has a diocesan audience, I think it'd be very interesting for folks to hear about Valentina's connections in the diocese and what the diocese has been able to do to help.
Oh, absolutely.
And beyond the diocese, too, obviously her connections in Spain as well. But the needs that continue for people to donate, to help. But I think the diocesan story here is a very interesting one as well.
Valentina, can you briefly explain how what the original medical mission was and how it changed after the invasion, and what kind of support, as Chris is wisely suggesting, what kind of support are you getting from our diocese, and also what kind of additional support do you need in our diocese? I'll let you kind of lay that out for the people, okay?
Sure. So medical... How Telos of Mercy become a medical mission? It is because of suggestion of my uncle Alexander. He said to me one day when Telos of Mercy just about to be registered as a nonprofit organization, no? He said, "Well, if you would like to tell people about God, tell them about Him in a really real way." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, if you want to do a mission, do something that you could touch people directly, you know, and medical mission is a mission that there can be no more direct help. When you're touching, by touching the body, you're touching the soul of the person." And so it was very special for me, because a very unexpected, I guess, way I would go on, because I have nothing to do with medical at all. I'm not a doctor, not a nurse. I have no idea about how to treat person in a medical way. But what I did found out is that we could help hospitals and clinics and hospices in Ukraine to receive updated medical equipment. And that's how it started, so 15 years ago. But then primarily my work started with Ukrainian gynecology doctors in 2011, because with a shipment of first container of medical supplies, I had many birthing beds in that container, and I realized that as much as the life can be received in this very bed, on this very bed, same time it could be taken, right, by brutality of abortion. So I had to speak to the doctors of that hospital where we shipped everything for the first time about the dignity of life of a child in the womb. And so that's how the mission started, with the doctors, and then we start providing natural family planning education for the doctors in Ukraine, because with the newer updated methods, and to get them excited about how they could show and teach the women about those methods. And And that's how I've got a little group of doctors sort of around our mission. And my friend, Genia Samborska, she was leading one of the seminars of natural family planning. And I called her and I said, listen, I have somebody who's going to sponsor the group of gynecology doctors to go to Medjugorje. And she said, Valentina, do you understand these doctors will not go to Medjugorje? Because they, first of all, it's so hard to even do anything with them regarding, you know, this seminar that she said I'm leading.
I think we're losing a little audio here, Chris. So
yeah.
Now, you've been talking to Valentina, and we'll join her when she hops back in again, because the sound went away. Maybe she may not even realize it at this point. But, you know, she went from shipping birthing beds, and then the last thing she just talked about was shipping 13 tons of food in a truck.
Yeah, well, it's you know, if I could just say, God works in these amazing ways, right? So all of the work that she was doing with the doctors in Ukraine and the pilgrimages and having doctors from Spain coming and doing medical missions, all of that was a precursor to her being able now to, through those same connections, because she's so connected to the medical world in Ukraine and in Spain, and because she's connected also through her mission with our diocese, all of a sudden, all of these different constituents were able to help. And of course, the needs for the medical needs now, I mean, you've got all these people that are horribly wounded. And so the medical needs, who would have ever dreamt that this would be what we'd be seeing when she started the medical mission? But yeah, you see how God works.
It is remarkable.
How it prepared the way for now for this medical response. And I'm sure she'll mention about Mayo Clinic donating and medical supplies from Spain and the humanitarian supplies from people all over our diocese and tons and tons and tons of things. And God prepared the way for all of this.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. Valentina, I believe we have you back again.
Yes, I'm back. I'm very sorry.
No. You do not have to apologize. We understand perfectly that we're talking literally about infrastructure. This is the infrastructure of the internet, which is getting better throughout the state. But the fact that with your medical mission history, which you just described to us, you had, and as Chris just pointed out again, you had already established a specific infrastructure for delivering certain services to Ukraine, which fall perfectly into the current needs because of the war going on. It's again, Chris was just saying that God's plan is so extraordinary sometimes. Who would have dreamed?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I see his providence from the beginning. And I have to mention, as I believe I stopped, it was interrupted when I was describing about gynecology doctors. Why I want to say this very, very much from the depth of my heart, because this right now I see that as well as a providence of God, because as we suffer so much with the loss of every child that was killed during this war, or raped during this war by Russian military soldiers, I just see that right now there's something very new is being set on fire in Ukrainian hearts. It's like we want to defend every Ukrainian, including the one that is just been conceived. That has been that's just something that I see in social media, you know, I see it's being spoken really largely, and every Ukrainian is a treasure right now, because we understand that every soldier or person, civil or military person, have died during this already, you know, this soon to be 4 months of war. No, there has to be a lot of repair done, and a part of the repair is to allow the life now to proud, and you know, touched me so deeply. There was a city of Ukraine, Bucha, that I believe every person who watches TV probably heard about or know about Ukraine. No, it was brutally destroyed by Russian. It was a lot of raping happened there, is a lot of torturing, a lot of horrible, just absolutely insanely horrible things happen. So, and after it was liberated, mother decided to, over the bullet holes that remained in her fences of her of entrance of her house, she decided to paint flowers over it. And I can describe to you how it touched all of us. It's like, yes, and you are right. We will fight because we are on our land. We're defending our country, our people, our culture, our language, our traditions, our right to be and to live as Ukrainian nation, just like everybody else want to have their peace and just to live in our territories and build our country and finally to break loose from the Red Dragon, no?
Yeah.
Because Ukraine has been tied to the tail of the Red Dragon all these years, even though it was seems free from the Soviet Union. The thread was just really, really fine and seems like a silk, but it was always present there. And only now we are being set free. And so this preparation with the work with the doctors, you know, now so many of them are going to be those that will speak from the heart about the love and about the dignity and about how precious every child is, you know. So, and yes, and regarding how shipping containers of medical supplies, and I must say this. So the second day of war, I have called to Chris, and I just begin to basically verbalize my ideas, what I'm going to do now, because it was shock. Now I'm going back and I'm thinking about, it's just a surreal, no? To hear about first bombings over Kyiv and other cities and that Russians are at the door and there's many of them, thousands of tanks. We did not know what's going to be, no? We were very afraid that Kyiv is going to be taken and that would be over. That would be nothing to fight anymore about, yeah. Especially if our President Zelensky would be killed.
He's,
yes.
He has become a world hero. I have to ask you a question now. Yes. How have the people of the Diocese of La Crosse helped? Mm-hmm. What have they done? And also, more importantly now, what additional can they do?
Yeah, so I asked Chris to help me to visit with the Bishop William Callahan, of Bishop La Crosse Diocese, our bishop here. And so he gave me a time, and Bishop Callahan, he spent it with me like most all the morning and most all afternoon of just being and talking and understanding and caring and seeing what the things could be done. I have asked him if he could give me a green light basically to communicate with every parish in our diocese to begin to collect humanitarian aid. He gave me all the blessing. I was really deeply touched. You know, there's a saying we have in Ukraine, you will know who is your friend at the time of the need. You will know it. The people who I have expected, who I knew during this time, 15 years for Child of Mercy Mission, who I expected to be right there, right, give me a shoulder, a strong one, it appeared to be not there. It was shocking. But when, I was amazed. I did not expect it, I should say, to receive such a warm welcoming. And, you know, well, in the Bishop Callahan, he knows about Mission Child of Mercy for many, many years. I each year have a visit with him, thankfully to Chris, where we go together. I update him about what's happening, and it's been always really warm welcoming. And this time it was total understanding, no extra questions. I mean, he was really, really deeply understood the situation that is happening in Ukraine. It touched me and it gave me such a strong support and platform to which I will be grateful for him till rest of my life. And so reaction was really fast, and thankfully to Chris, Chris was immediately contacted every parish. And in a matter of a week, we were able to collect 71 pallets, a regular size pallet of all kinds of supplies, starting from medical and finishing with hygiene products and baby products, all kinds of things for baby, food, clothing, military, also tactical gear for our soldiers, and you name it. I mean, it was just mountains of things. It was overwhelming when things start arriving to McDonald High School in Chippewa Falls Catholic School. They give us a space to organize all these pallets. We made chaos there, you know, with our I did not expect it to see in a matter of 1 week so much being delivered. And so we have done collection 2 times, and you know, all together it was more about 40 tons of humanitarian aid supplies have been donated between the diocese and, well, I should say in the diocese from the parishes. But then we have also Mayo Clinic, and Mayo system, clinic system is surprised me so much as well, because I was very much hoping for organizations that I used to work with, but they were not able to provide much. But Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, they basically give me $1 million worth. We're talking about some things that is not possible to even obtain in Europe, you know? Surgical different type of tools and I would not be able to tell you all the names of it, but it was just so much value for this. And now we have shipped already seven seven shipments of each time around 25 pallets of humanitarian aid. So we're coming closer to about 80 or 90 tons of things. And we're talking about every week we have shipped humanitarian aid to Ukraine. And logistics were seem impossible. How do you get everything? And it was a struggle. It was a great struggle in the beginning, you know, but again, Holy Spirit just opened every door, and, you know, I like Jesus is a gentleman. He opens gently doors and only opens if we open to him, right? But here he was breaking with his foot every door that I needed.
Valentina, you know, yeah. It's remarkable. We you're talking about how unexpected people helped out. And we had a saying a long time ago when I was in the military that when the going gets tough, the tough get going. And this is a spirit I have seen in this community and in this state and in this diocese for 30 odd years now. I won't recount the various episodes right now. But, you know, Chris, you're sitting back watching all this stuff happen. Can you actually believe that this was going on? I mean, did your jaw drop open, or how did that work?
I was amazed. First of all, I wondered how we were going to do it. I really, really wanted to help. And I thought, okay, so we have to have a system. So we're going to have some places and parishes and schools step forward to say, we'll be a drop-off site, we'll be a donation site. And then and Valentina supplied a very detailed list of needs. And then so we posted the needs, and then we thought, well, okay, so then it's all going to have to get to McDonald High School on these 2 dates, these delivery dates. How will we do that? We thought, well, we'll have the various parishes bring things to key sort of hub sites, and then we'll have volunteers driving trucks, and some of the trucks are very big trucks and trailers, and they will come and they will pick up, and then they will bring everything to McDonald. But we needed people to step forward who would be in charge of the different sites, and the generosity was amazing. And I have to say that in all of this, there were 9 deacons that were very instrumental in this. And I point that out because the word deacon means servant. And I was just so edified to see these 9 men, but so many other people too, teachers and secretaries and pastors and school kids and everybody trying to help with this. And one of the most moving moments, I was able to go one weekday evening to McDonald and just help with a bit of tying up some of the last items of some of the packing. And Valentina was having people packing emergency medical kits. she was talking about some of the things that would go even to help soldiers. And so there were tourniquets in these little kits. They were just little kits, but the tourniquet, she explained, these soldiers and civilians too, they get wounded and they can just die from bleeding to death. And these little tourniquets can be the difference between life and death for them. So there were hundreds of tourniquets being put into these boxes. And some of these were purchased with the donations because, you know, some things are donated and people give diapers and whatnot. But some things, Valentina knows what they are. And so some of the funds that come in, she can go out and buy things like the medical emergency kits using some of those donated funds. So the donated funds are very, very important as well and continue to be. That's my observation.
Well, I should also say now, Valentina, if a person wants to help monetarily at this point, because we have situations, for example, now down in Peru, that people would like to ship things down to our orphanage, but by the time it's shipped there, it doesn't work to do it. And so money can buy things. I know that there were some Ukrainian organizations in Milwaukee that were getting medical supplies from Israel because it was relatively, you know, they could get it there. Obviously, if you can get cash and you know specifically what you need because you're talking to your relatives who are sitting there, how do they go about donating money to Chalice of Mercy for this particular purpose?
Yes, it's true. Certain things we just cannot receive donation. They cannot be donated. For example, right now, I just came back from Spain and we are organizing entire 53-foot truck, a big truck of medications that can be used only in a hospital. We're talking about antibiotics, intravenous antibiotics, all kinds of medications that we'll need, we need to treat wounded soldiers and civilian people, and also medications like you could buy at the drugstore, you know. So a full truck. We get very good discount, but we still need to buy this and we still need to pay for the truck company to deliver this to Ukraine. You see, so finances for us is so absolutely essential. And also each time that I ship humanitarian aid from United States, whether it is, you know, supplies that were donated from parishes or from Mayo Clinic, I still have to pay for the shipment. It's really, really, really reasonable price, but it's still a lot. Again, I want to use this opportunity to thank everyone, absolutely every person who have sent us an envelope with a small or big or very big donation. It's the support of people throughout the United States have been amazing. My mailbox is, especially the first month, was full. I have never seen anything like this. No, so many letters, so many beautiful cards with a donation have been sent. And so people, if they, and we still need this, the war is just, let's say we are not finished and it doesn't look like it's going to finish anytime soon. So if anybody would like to donate, they can go to our website, chaliceofmercy.org. They can write a check or donate through PayPal account that is on website. Also, we have a GoFundMe account that is also, all details is on website. Just go into donation page. And so, yes, this right now for us, extremely essential, no financial donation. Anything that is being donated 100% goes to Ukraine. Yes, no other, not even a single penny has been spent for anything else besides just shipping and purchasing things for Ukraine.
Of yes. course, I can understand that. And this is one of the benefits of dealing with a church-oriented charity. Most church-oriented charities, Catholic charities, or the various relief organizations that Chris works with, extremely efficient use of the money. And I'm going to give out the website again. It's very simple, chaliceofmercy.org. That's the main destination point, and you can take it from there. And as you said, they have PayPal. There's ways that you can write checks and mail them. chaliceofmercy.org. It's very, very simple. I'm going to ask you a quick question before we take a break, Valentina. Have you ever met Pope Francis?
I have not.
he should be meeting you. I think he should be giving you a blessing because you are the embodiment of so much of the things that he talks about. Selfless help, It's just remarkable. I expect someday to see a picture of you in the Pope meeting. When peace returns. Right now, you're too busy.
But I will say this, Jack,
yes.
Because she wouldn't say it, but I will, that she just came back from Spain because she was awarded for the work of Chalice of Mercy, an International Merit Cross, which is a very important sign of recognition of the beautiful humanitarian work being done by Chalice of Mercy and the connection with Spain. And I know Valentina's humble and she wouldn't, she doesn't want to draw any attention to herself. But I think it's just one more recognition that this is extremely important work and it's having beautiful, beautiful results.
Yeah, I'm so happy you mentioned that because this whole story is, again, one of the top three most remarkable stories I've talked about in 10 years. And, a few weeks ago, it seemed like we were talking about the Afghan refugees and the remarkable stuff that Karen Becker at Catholic Charities did because Roberto was out of the country. Remarkable work that is done in this diocese by average, common, good people. And I'm so happy you got that award because you certainly deserve it. You certainly do. And we're gonna take just a quick break and we're going to come back for some final comments. Okay, I'll be right back with these remarkable people and this remarkable story. We'll get right back to the show, but talking about the show and what we are listening to right now, one of the reasons for the success of what's going on with this Ukraine operation is that there is infrastructure and organization. You can have the best intent in the world, and if you don't have the infrastructure, the things you can use, and the organization, it doesn't always work as well. You waste a great deal of time. You spin your wheels, as they say. The Diocese of La Crosse is very, very efficient at infrastructure and organization. They do this because A, money is tight, and B, they want to make the most use of everyone's time and efforts to get the job of the diocese done. It's a tremendous operation. Everything from training seminarians to talking to new people who are considering being priests to dealing with Catholic Charities and dealing with the problems of the homeless. This project with Ukraine to support this and advertise this and get things going. The local church is taking donations. All this is infrastructure and all this is organization. Quite frankly, this also takes some money. And so as the bishop asks you for various donations at times, the bishop's annual appeal, all these different things, it's just something that if you can shell out some money, it really will help. This is extremely efficient. Your money goes a tremendously long way, and it is desperately needed because the need is increasing exponentially. The more things that go on in the world, the more things that go on right here at home, the more the church jumps in and says, we can help. It's part of our job. But to do that, we need the infrastructure. We need the organization. We need volunteers. And also, we need your cash as well. So please respond to the bishop's appeals to the collection plates in the churches, and we'll keep doing the great, great stuff that is being done in the Diocese of La Crosse. And please don't forget to support us with your prayers as well. Bishop is adamant about that. We live on prayers. So thank you for all of your support. Okay, let's get back to the show. Valentina, Chris, you guys, you have touched my heart once again. I keep saying over and over on this show, the stories that we cover and the people that we talk about, the common average person in the Diocese of La Crosse, the great Wisconsin people and their generosity, and these people who go out of their way to drill wells for people in Africa so they could have fresh water, the work in Peru, the work with our refugees that just were at Fort McCoy, and now this incredibly large effort. And ongoing, because as you say, Valentina, this isn't over yet. I wish to God it would. I wish tomorrow we would wake up and find out that suddenly something has happened and it's over. But we have to wait. We have to pray. We have to pray and pray and pray and pray. But gee whiz, yes. Any final comments from you first, Valentina, and then I'll ask Chris for the same thing.
With the depth of my heart, I want to, again, just express my gratitude with my love and my prayer, gratitude to every single person in our diocese throughout the United States, throughout the world, helping right now Ukraine. There have been so many nonprofit organizations, so many people. Every one of us who is from Ukraine cannot drink a sip of water without thinking about our soldiers, thinking about our civilian people who are suffering, our children who are suffering. It has been our suffering to see what was happening in Mariupol and Azov steel factory. And thankfully to God, last night there was 7 buses of wounded soldiers were evacuated. It's been our suffering to the bitter cry and just lamentation to God, if you know what I mean. It's just that these people might be evacuated. No, so many is still not yet, and it's really difficult. So I beg to continue to pray. Everyone who is hearing, continue to pray, because we're living in the times of which Our Lady of Fatima has spoken. And it is not only concerning Ukraine. And I know it's tiring after some time. We're like, well, there's just so much happening in the entire world. And yes, it's happening because Our Lady said, dear children, you are praying too little. You are praying too little. No, and she is inviting us to pay attention to one very main fact, that with the help of our prayer, she is the one to crush the head of Satan, right? The head of a red dragon. And we must remember that prayer of the rosary is the weapon that is so absolutely so powerful against Satan. He has no strength. He loses his strength by ever even the name of Mary being mentioned. And our soldiers, my friends who are fighting, and I must mention just really quickly that we also organize pilgrimages to Medjugorje for soldiers, several groups. And I'm in contact with many of them who are right now fighting, and they say they all have rosary with them. It's on their necks and and on their hand, in their pockets. And they say, we feel the power of prayer. It's unbelievable. We should have been dead already by now, but somehow bullets avoiding us. So the protection of mental of Our Lady. No, and we must really concentrate our entire being right now on the times that we're living, and not trying to avoid this as a, it's just something, another country that is does not concern me. What's yeah. happening right now, it is the renewal of a history of the world, and it will depend on us.
Very
because
good.
If we finally choose to walk with God into this history, there will be surely a blessing. If not, then what can we expect? Right. Yeah,
this is so, a defining moment. It really is. Chris, I have to say you are the right person at the right time to be in the right position over at the diocese.
Well, thank you, Jack. I think I feel Valentina and I have talked many times about God's providence, and just there's God is writing an amazing story in the life of the world, in the life of every one of us. And just look at the ways God prepared Valentina and Chalice of Mercy for the mission today. It just, and out of this, I don't know what's going to come in the future once the Russians finally back down, or they're, you know, who knows what the future holds exactly, but it's looking like they've realized that they've tried to do more than they could, and they didn't realize how strong the Ukrainians would be and the rest of the world behind yeah. the Ukrainians. So, but Valentina's mention of prayer, I mean, this is a massive story in the life of the world of salvation, and our prayers are so critically important. And I just would want to echo what Valentina said about prayer, and just don't get tired of this. Don't say, well, I've heard enough about Ukraine. I've got to think about other things. Don't get tired of it. Do whatever you can to help. These are our brothers and sisters, and we're all brothers and sisters in Christ. So yeah. That would be my kind of closing thought.
Excellent, excellent. Now, this for your information, along with the show being archived at the diocesan website, it is also broadcast on 2 Catholic networks and is also put up on a variety of podcasting sites as well. So if you want to play this again or listen to it again, the first place to go is diolc.org/connecting. And you can download the entire show. It's free. We don't ask for passwords or anything else. You can just download it. If you want to share it with somebody else who hasn't heard it, by all means, please do so. It's my privilege and my honor to be hearing from both of you at this tumultuous time, making a genuine difference with the support of the people of the Diocese of La Crosse once again. Always leaves me feeling uplifted. Thank you both so much for being here, and give us updates as permits, okay?
Thank you, Jack.
Thank you so much, Jack. And thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Valentina.
Jack Socha here with you on Connecting the Diocese. What a remarkable story. All of that non-lethal aid going to Ukraine where it's needed. Sustenance, protection, and healing. Just remarkable. You know, everybody, I think, at some time in their life is witness to something extraordinary that's going on. And I'm sure if you think back in your life, you have seen some things happening. And it doesn't really have to be overly dramatic. The trick is that it's interesting to be open to it, to notice it when it's right in front of you. And sometimes, and I can attest to this, I've had things right in front of me, remarkable, happen that I didn't even realize because my eyes were not really open. And it seems like every once in a while, if you pay close attention, God sends you a little message in the form of someone who is doing something selfless that kind of reminds you that maybe you haven't done something like that for a while. It makes you feel a little bit smaller. I kind of got knocked off my perch just just a couple of days ago by just such a person. A few days ago, after I took some recycling to the recycling center, I stopped by a local thrift store that was having a sale. And out in front, there was a large bin of books that were 10 cents a piece. And there was a young man there. He is working in a sheltered workshop. He is challenged. He gets around on a bright yellow balloon tire bicycle with one of those milk carton kind of blue plastic things strapped to the back. And of course, I was poking around other stuff. I'm always looking for the oddball camera or some computer part, or, you know, spare microphone or something I can always find. And he was really pretty excited. He says, "You should really come over and look at this big pile of books." And there was quite the pile of them. Again, 10 cents a piece. And he's pouring through them. He's sorting them out and he's picking a few of them. And he said, "Yeah, what I like to do is I like to go around and, you know, they've got these places where they've got the little free libraries, the little kind of house-shaped things with the doors on front that are frequently near schools or churches or whatever." He said, "I like to go and I like to find these books that I think are really neat and I like to put them in the library so other people can enjoy them." Now, this young man is not going to be heading a massive relief program to help out in a disaster or a war or something like that, but he has it in his heart that he wants to give other people a little bit of joy, that he finds books that he carefully looks at and thinks, "I think people will like these," and then he gives them away. Now, of course, he's spending his own money. Granted, only 10 cents a book isn't too bad, but he probably isn't exactly rich. But what a heart he has to be thinking of others and finding in a very small way, as far as he's concerned, no big deal, but in a very small way, to make other people happy. And he's doing it really without even, you know, looking for any kind of praise. He's not trying to get any kind of awards. He's just doing it. And maybe, just maybe, you picked up a book from a little free library that you're really enjoying as we move into summer, and you never can tell. It could have been put there by a guy on a little yellow balloon tire bicycle that you'll never meet and probably never get to thank. It's just remarkable. You have to have eyes to see some of the remarkable things around you. So I hope that this week that you spot the small remarkable things as well as the big remarkable things, because there is so much out there. Now, Valentina, in my estimate, is a hero. And this young man on his yellow balloon tire bike with his books in the back is also a hero. I'll see you next week, right here on Connecting the Diocese. I can fly higher.
beneath my wings.